Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our second edition of our photo show. Ewan is still not able to join us, so we're attempting to make an even better impression than we did last week. Again, thanks to Damien and Ian for joining us, and they're going to provide their expertise while I try and move the show along. So the first item we're going to talk about is items of news that we've had in the last week or so. Damien, you had an item about the Sony competition you wanted to raise.
Yes, exactly. They released the Sony competition, and I'm sure that many people watching the show put their entries in and think is what's going to win. And what I always find is wonderful to see, but also frustrating, is that it's a very the powerful photographs are the simplest ones, and the one that we have is this one that you can see here, which I particularly like, which is we've got a gentleman with his hands over his face and the glasses. I could almost recreate it here. He'd done this, and it had been a very, very powerful black and white picture. I like that photograph very much. Did you look through them, Ian, and see any pictures you liked of them?
Yes. I think what you've got to remember, it's easy to get down about these. You know, if you do get into entering competitions and that, it's easy to get down. I was just reading the article. 345,000 images entered, yeah. You know, from 203 countries. What you've got to remember is these people that are judging these images are seeing these images for split second, and they're having to make that decision, you know, does it get shortlisted, does it not get shortlisted? So you, going back to your point around simple and have an impact, those images typically they do get through because they're seen for such a short space of time. It's that immediate impact that works, and that image that you pointed out, it's such a, you know, it's a simple idea, it's, you know, the lighting's nice, it's well executed, but ultimately, it's a shot that, you know, a lot of people could do but haven't done. Obviously, that person has done it.
That's right. Tom Oldham from United Kingdom. There's a few others but that one really caught me. I particularly like the one done by the Lily Dawson Punchon, who did almost like created the pearl earring lady, but in fact used headphones, and that was very clever as well.
But simple idea. I mean, you know, it's not particularly technical from a photography point of view, but yeah,
well thought out and creative
and well executed. Yeah,
so they're very good to look through, and I always enjoy browsing through those.
Do you enter competitions at all, Damien? I know you do, Ian. You've had a few entries, success.
Yes, I enjoy going into them. I mean, my best success, I think, has been I got shortlisted for the British Photographic Awards. So I've been shortlisted for that, longlisted in National Geographic, and then the 250 years of the canals of Birmingham. I actually got the first prize, which really fired me up, because I actually thought, well, after years of trying, you can get there. You just depend on what the judges, it's all down to the judges. And as Ian says, if you've just in that split moment caught their attention and they like what you've done, it's down to personal opinion on it.
Yeah, it's the thing with competitions, it's too easy to beat yourself up as a photographer. You've got to it's a slippery slope to go down if competitions is all you want to do. I know of photographers that have put images into the Landscape Photographer of the Year competition, and, you know, one year they've got commended, but where they've previously entered it, it's got nowhere. But they've put the same image in another year, and it's got commended. So that doesn't mean it was a bad image the first time around. It just means that it didn't grab the judge's attention the first time around. So it's just, there's just no point beating yourself up over it.
No, my background is an academic, and as an academic of any academics out there, you've got to write grants to get money for your research, and it's hard. You get rejected all the time, but if you just hit that one, you just get that one in, you're made. And that's what I think many photographers are looking for. That's just that one image that gets you there. And you've had success your selfie, and you've done well. So you know what it's like. Just that one success makes failure worthwhile.
Yeah, it's worth doing, but yeah, just don't beat yourself up over it if you don't get
that's
anywhere.
That's true.
I suppose really you need to work out what the judges are looking for rather than what you're thinking is a good photograph. I've seen that many times where people have put, I see photographs and thought, well, that's a definite winner. And then judges ignore it completely and go for something and thought, well, no, it's not even the same. So it's very projective, isn't it, about what mm-hmm. people like. And it's trying to work out with what the judges are going to choose. Okay.
And then you forget the obvious. If your friends and family and people around you enjoy your photographs, then you're pleasing people. And why worry? Why, you know, as you say...
Yeah, that's it. We've got to remember why you've gone out with a camera in the first place.
Yeah.
And of course, it can be very, very productive. You were going to show us about the digital camera, Ian? About the...
I've not heard of the competition before, actually. It's the HIPA Awards.
Right.
I'm just trying to find the story now. But £120,000 top prize, just astonishing.
Yeah.
So it's a Australian underwater photographer won the award, Jasmine Carey. And it is a beautiful image. You've got this humpback whale and its sibling. And you've got a little bit of light coming through the sea. And there's a lot of negative space, but it's just very simple. Again, it's quite a simple image, but it's quite striking. And if you look at it, I've actually looked at it, you can see a bigger version of it. And you know what? It's a pretty noisy image as well. But, you know, it works. And... that photographer's done all right. $120,000. It's a lot of money in it for one photo.
That's right, yes. Being in the right place, right time, being dedicated. I bet they spent hours, days, weeks tracking and getting there for that one.
Yeah,
that's fascinating. I think we should all try. I know we had our own little BTN photograph competition, didn't we, that we took interest in adding photographs in, and that... it does give you, I think I got one good comment about one photograph I took. It made my day. I was so happy that I actually got a good comment. Right, let's move on to some new kit that we've been looking at this week. Okay, so what we'd like to talk about now is a few of the new bits of kit that we've spotted during the week that may be of interest to certainly us and maybe from you out there as well. So I'm going to kick off with Damien. You saw a new Ryko that you took an interest in.
Yes, I saw a new Ryko that's more design than camera, and it's got a nice yellow line. It's around the lens, and it's got a sort of a gritty feel. They've made it feel reflect the rough asphalt of the streets, so the blurb says, and it's got a very easy feel. It won't slip out of your hands. It looks really pretty. But I suspect someone will take it off you if you start taking pictures with it rather than taking pictures of them. But yes, it's an interesting design feature to the camera market.
Yeah, I was going to say that it looks almost the same cost as an iPhone. So you are sort of making yourself a little bit vulnerable, especially that big orange. You know how people spot certain things like a Rolex watch and stuff like that. That very sharp orange ring round, it might be a indicator this is a good quality camera.
Yes. I suppose really, I mean, I go out with my iPhone taking pictures. It's okay for taking street photography, but sometimes I'd like to have a little bit more adjustment over the manual settings, and I think you can get some apps that do that. But it's still pretty good, the iPhone, and people tend to accept you putting an iPhone in their face or taking pictures rather than having a camera which they spot immediately.
I think this camera falls into that awkward back bracket though. We touched on it last week around, you know, smartphones taking over the market. I mean, this camera falls in one of those cracks. It's a compact camera, so you're limited. You're paying £1,000 for just the camera when you can pay £1,000 for a phone and a smartphone and the camera and the video and the rest of it that comes with a smartphone. yes, it might be not that nice size for street photography, but is it much different to taking a small mirrorless body and a nice little prime lens on it? Maybe not, you know. So it falls into that awkward space between smartphone and a slight step up to mirrorless. And yeah, I don't think there's necessarily a massive market there.
Yeah, so the market's going to get squeezed because that you mentioned that compact market is getting a bit tighter and tighter. And I've just noticed we could have even spent the whole show just talking about new iPhones that are coming up. Not iPhones, but the new Galaxy and I even read the newspaper and it'll tell you your best phone for taking photographs. They're just getting quite incredible.
The one issue that I saw was this talk about taking cameras to protests. There's an issue about whether you're going as a protester or are you going as a photographer to photograph protesters. And you've got to be very careful about the kit you're taking. A large SLR with a big lens on it, you're going to put a big target on your back. And there's also the article was talking about, you know, think carefully. Don't suddenly stop when you're walking along to take photographs. Or if you bend down suddenly to take a low shot, you could easily be trampled or walked upon or fall over. Of course, the whole issue then about the police, whether they're seeing you taking photographs with a camera as opposed to something with a phone, it might have a different aspect on them. We might discuss that later in the show when we talk about the current process. Ian, you had an interesting about these new Delkin cards.
Yeah, so Delkin have announced, no price yet, but they've announced a 2 terabyte compact flash express card, which is just insane. I mean, my internal hard drive's nowhere near that size, so I'm not even sure how I'd download one of these cards, let alone fill it up to shoot with it in the first place. So I guess there must be a demand for it, otherwise they wouldn't make it, but I guess it's a relatively small demand. I guess it's going to be more aimed at the video users, you know, shooting 4K, you're going to eat some significant data pretty quickly, but still 2 terabytes. From my point of view, I'd have no use for it as a photographer, and I'd be concerned, one, the price. I mean, I think their 1 terabyte cards are $800. So this car is going to be, it's going to be worth as much as my camera. So it's a lot of money. And, you know, if you are going to fill it up, that's thousands of images. And then if you were to lose that card or if it got corrupt, something happened to it, it's a lot to lose in one go. So I think there's something to be said for having lots of smaller cards and, and sometimes you don't want to be in a scenario where you fill the card up and then you're trying to swap cards, you know, because the action's not going to stop. So it's finding that balance. But yeah, I just thought it was interesting. 2 terabytes. It's interesting to see what they can do in these small sizes as well. You know, 2 terabytes. You know, when you think, well, a floppy disk was 1.4 megabytes, it's just some of our listeners won't even know what that is, I suppose.
Yeah, the 1.4 was bigger than some of the cameras we've got, the phones we've got now. Yeah. But Ian, you do a lot of stop motion photography and multiple shot photographs. So over a long time span, would that card then maybe come into you? You don't have to keep adjusting the camera or touching the camera to record quite a long period of time.
No, I mean, even when I'm doing the time-lapse stuff, it's not mega amounts of data. And I would always, you know, when I've done a shoot, I'd always make sure I download that card. I wouldn't, you know, keep shooting for days or weeks on end and then think, oh, I'm going to download 2 terabytes worth of data. I wouldn't trust it.
It could be, I haven't looked at the whole space, but it could be more to do with video. If you're shooting,
I think that's, definitely.
Some cameras now doing 8K video. That must be huge fast.
Yeah, there's going to be a need for it. And yeah, the good thing is they've, by making it, eventually this stuff's going to come down in price, isn't it? So it's a step in the right direction. But at the moment, I don't think there's going to be many people rushing out to buy a 2 terabyte card. Yeah.
But it will drive down prices of say 256 or something like that down lower, because it compresses the whole scale all the way down.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd only have my 6 terabyte backup drive would be the only thing I could put that onto. Nothing else in my armor here would cover 2 terabytes. So,
yeah. I mean, we could go on a whole storage. We could do that on another photographic show. Just talk about storage, how you store. Some people really will love this card because they'll just take all the pictures and then just put it to one side and buy another card. If they've got that, a professional photographer may see that as a way of helping to store. But what's the long term and with all those pictures on and cataloguing it and that? Yes.
Yeah, that's a big subject. We could certainly spend some time on that.
Well, cataloguing is one of Ewan's favourite items to discuss.
Bring back Aperture.
Yeah, I think we'll bring back. Get him going on that one. So we'll wait until he's back and in good form when we raise that one. Yeah. Okay, guys. I thought we might use the last bit of the show just to discuss the current situation with the shooting of George Floyd started it all off, and now we have this Black Lives Matter demonstrations and process. We touched upon it earlier when we were talking about kit and photography. There are some aspects now of the demonstrations and what's happening, and certainly the use of photographs. And in the wider scope, what they're now saying, we've seen the thing about pulling statues down. They're now talking about they've removed some TV shows because of concerns. Is that going to spread into the photography area? Are we going to start finding certain photographs won't be now acceptable, need to be removed? And also the role of the photographer in these present demonstrations. Everyone seeing, when you see any kind of march going on now, you see half the people have got their phones up in the air and seem to be photographing everything. Is that a good or a bad thing?
I think I was keen to bring this topic up because I was looking at digital camera for the news, and there was about technique, about photographing the front line covering a Black Lives Matter protest, and there's a whole article really quite detached how to take pictures of the demonstration. Yet you could look at it in another layer, and I'm not sure where Alistair Campbell comes from, where his background is, but is he a professional photographer doing this? Does he have the right to take these pictures of the people demonstrating? And where do these pictures go? There's so many different facets of it. Is he a white person? Is he a black person? Would he have a different point of view about the riots? And are we just, I mean, the camera never lies. So it's showing us the demonstration, and there's a morbid fascination of it, but we also have a very serious subject that needs to be treated with respect. So it covers so many different parts to it.
But you mentioned before about the apartheid museum that you'd seen, and there were some incredibly powerful photographs taken there, which don't seem to have got of much coverage as maybe they should.
I think that's one of the places that really affected me most, was going to the apartheid museum in South Africa, more so than other places that I've been to. And much of the walking through the museum is pictorial, and some of the pictures are just snapshots of life that the three of us would just never ever let happen, and how it happened. And it's a real powerful documentary of the rise and the fall of the apartheid. So that this made me interested in working out. I then started looking with this Black Lives Matter of the Windrush pictures and photography that had been done in the past, documenting. And I quite like documentary photography. So if you delve into that, certainly Victoria and Albert have done documentaries of the history of the black person, and I would recommend it as really powerful stuff to look at.
From my point of view, it is important that these things are documented. I think that's the key thing. So, I've made the point myself to to take a few photos just on my phone, but through the whole coronavirus thing, because there's things that I've seen that I'm glad I took the pictures, because even now, even just a few months down the line, I can look back at them and think, wow, was that really going on then? Empty shelves in the supermarket and closed signs on door, on shops up the high street and stuff like that. So would I encourage someone to go to a protest and take photos? I'm not so sure. I think there's a safety element, but I think there is an importance to capturing these moments, because as you say, Damien, there will become a point down the line where people will be looking back at this situation, and photography can be really powerful like that. I mean, you've been to the museum and it struck a chord with you. So, and these are just images. They have a way of telling a story, without video and sound and just imagery. So I think it's important that people do try and capture and record these things that are going on.
Yeah, I was driving through central London on the first Saturday of the lockdown, and I drove up Piccadilly through Regent Street along Oxford Street where we were going, and I didn't see six people on a Saturday evening at 5:30. It was really, really bizarre. But that's almost 3 months ago. It seems a different time, as you say, and if these things aren't recorded, it's going to seem so strange to think that was actually going on. The other thing that struck me, we were talking about it, was I saw an article about the power of words, and it came about because of flash guns. A lot of them are referred to as slave and master units. And we talked about it, and we're saying that it's something I never ever thought about. It was just it's just a term that you use to the guns. But to a coloured person, would that really be insulting? And would that there's now talk that they may start trying to change those definitions?
I've been in photography a while now, and when I first got into flash, and that whole master slave scenario was explained to me, it made total sense to me. This is your master flash, this is your slave flash. Never did I consider the connotations of it. Just to me, it just made sense. Okay, that one's the master and that one's the slave. But never would I have thought, wow, that's a bit insensitive. Yeah. So now I can see it with everything that's going on. So I guess, the manufacturers probably do need to look in the mirror and think of some better terminology. Of course, with these things, it's never done with, I don't think it's done with bad intentions initially. I think it'll probably need reviewing now.
Yeah, well, it's strange the way that talks. I can remember in the building trade, we don't call it a stopcock anymore. You don't have a monkey wrench. It's really bizarre the way language changes in connotations.
There is a point that we should move on. I mean, it's back to the statues again and again with photography. Photography is moving on. We just move on, and it's nice to see the sort of the old cameras, but we move on. But we do go forward, and I do think we should have something that represents the day now and be up to date and everything that represents the society we live in now. Mm. But again, philosophical, onto cameras. Do we go into a demonstration? I remember photographing a Trump demonstration in Birmingham, and I got a bit nervous about taking pictures of people because they were wondering why I was taking pictures of them, and I think I'll leave it to the press and get who are more better at it rather than the sometimes the amateur.
Yeah, and I think unfortunately with these things, these 99% of the people that are going to these protests they want to protest for the right reasons, but unfortunately there's 1% that want to go there and just cause some trouble. So if you point a camera in that 1%, they might not, take too kindly to that. So, you've got to be sensible about these things.
And if you're using something like a DSLR, are you treated in a slightly different way? You're not part of the crowd. You're not part of the protesting crowd. You're a photographer, with all the connotations they seem to be adding to that now.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, And I think that's even more so these days, because not everyone, because so many people are using their phones. When you do then see someone with an SLR or and a big lens on it, oh, you know, you must be a member of the media or the press. You know what I mean? You might, so people aren't used to seeing those big cameras so much anymore, because not everyone owns a camera like that anymore. It's, you know, they've just got their smartphones.
But nearly everyone owns a phone. So that's it's become the common thing that people have in a phone. Is there an elitist thing now being added to that?
What, sorry, Martin?
Nearly everyone has a mobile phone these days. That's the common part for most people. Are people like ourselves who use slightly better kit or more advanced kit, are we now considered a bit elitist and that to be treated in a different way?
I remember taking pictures at Marylebone Station of a camera, and I was told to stop. And I said, well, there's a person over there using the phone. But they said, that's acceptable. So it's acceptable to be using the iPhone. But if you either stand out as being someone with the police or someone with the press or someone with a not up to any good, if you bring out a camera, the traditional camera.
I must. I don't know, but it'd be interesting to find out what the legalities are of that. Maybe we can do that sometime, some other times. Exactly what you are and aren't allowed to do in street photography.
We're gonna have lots and lots of questions lined up for Ewan, because he'll have an opinion on that one as well for us.
Yeah. Well, I said I don't want to say anything that could be either wrong. Don't want to give the wrong idea to anyone. But I know there are certain rules about what you can and can't photograph. So yeah, when the expert's back, we'll ask that question. Okay, thanks guys, very interesting. So we'll keep this up for as long as we can. We're gonna try and bring some more people in for next week. So two things I have to say. One is thanks very much to our sponsors, TSO Hosts, who put all this together for BTN, as well as IMN Max. And a big thanks to Damien and Ian. Damien, where can we get hold of you?
DamienWormsley.com.
Okay. And Ian?
IanLewisPhoto.co.uk.
Lovely. Okay, that's great. Right, thanks very much, gents. Hopefully we'll see everyone next week. Stay safe and stay sound. Good night, all.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.